John Doe has the upper hand.
Put the gun down.
I saw you with the box. What was in the box?
Because I envy your normal life.
Put the gun down, David.
It seems that envy is my sin.
No, what's in the box?
Give me the gun.
What's in the fucking box?
Give me the gun.
Hey, everybody.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Ben.
And this is...
What's in the box? Yeah, that was pretty terrible, but we're going to roll with it.
That's fine. If this is your first time listening, and I know it is because it's the first episode, I want to provide a little context. We are examining the Venn diagram of our respective Letterboxd profiles. And if you look at the Letterboxd logo, it kind of looks like a Venn diagram.
Mm-hmm, sure.
We are going to play a game tonight.
Sweet.
You ready?
Ready as I can be. Before we get started, I just wanted to ask you, why did you want to start a podcast with me? What's the deal?
So you are a prolific consumer of content.
For sure.
You are a self-proclaimed videophile.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's fair.
1,000%.
You're a veritable sommelier of cinema.
I like that.
You do?
I think
you like
that,
it?
Yeah.
I came up with that earlier.
If you could just be everywhere I go as soon as I walk in a room as my hype person, mm-hmm. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I am a casual viewer.
Okay.
Well, I have prepared a game called Review the Review.
Oh, shit. All right.
So I have selected 5 movies. I think we watched them all together. We've definitely both watched them all. No, all together. In the last 2 weeks, and we both rated and reviewed.
Okay, so these are recent, fresh in our mind kind of watches.
Yes, and a couple of them are also recent releases.
Okay.
One of them is kind of a wild card because we didn't both watch the whole movie, but we both have an opinion on it.
All right.
I'm going to read to you my review and your review, not necessarily in that order. And then we're going to kind of weed through it and decide who had the better take.
Oh, my God.
Because now we've had some time to ruminate and, you know, it's not just our knee-jerk reaction to the film.
I'm sorry. Did you say this was a game?
Yes.
So
there will be points.
So if I want to win, if I want to win, I just say that I had
you
the better review.
You just vote for yourself.
Oh, my God.
No. You have to be a little more,
liberal, fair. Okay, sure. Yeah.
Okay. I had some trouble deciding what the first movie would be, but ultimately, I picked what I always wanted it to be. It's a recent view, recent release. We saw it together.
Okay.
Can you guess what it is?
The last movie we saw together at the cinema was The Substance.
That's right.
Yeah.
You got it.
God,
nailed
I'm so
it.
Glad I didn't forget.
Okay. So I'm going to read you my review.
All right.
Give Demi Moore an Oscar right now. 4 stars. And now your review. Too funny.
This shit was funny.
Well done to all involved. An instant classic for sure. Don't watch it while eating. 5 stars.
Hell yeah.
5 stars. Okay.
Who had the better review?
Well, and we can talk through like...
Me. I had the better review. I gave it the best score. I had more words in my review. I was more...
More words?
Yeah. And I didn't just credit...
What does that mean?
I didn't just credit one person. I credited everyone involved. Well, that includes... Like, not just the lead actress, but, you know.
Yeah, but.
Whoever
she
made the costumes and the gore effects and the sound design and all that crap. I think my review had a little bit more going for it.
Is okay. This what you mean? I was like, Demi needs her flowers.
For sure.
She deserves her flowers.
Yeah.
And also, I was going to give you this point anyway, because mm-hmm. This movie has been haunting me. This movie played me like a fiddle.
Oh, for sure.
Which we've already talked about,
mm-hmm.
but I felt everything it intended for me to feel. And I think that I rated it below 5 stars because I was like,
you scared.
I was resentful.
You scared to rate it something perfect, huh?
I resented the fact that this movie
took you.
Yeah.
For a ride?
Yeah.
It's okay. You can posthumously rate it 5 stars.
Posthumously?
Yeah, you can go back and...
Am I dead now?
I'm just saying like...
I'm dead now.
So here's how Letterboxd works, right? Let's say you throw up a 4-star review. You can go to the page of the movie itself and just, I think, click the middle horizontal. It says you've reviewed this film. You can click that and you can just change your rating.
Yeah.
So your 4-star review will be there, but then it'll show up on your account as 5 stars. Mm-hmm. I've done this before, not necessarily on rewatches, but like there's films that like Galaxy Quest that's a 5-star movie for me. I gave it like a 3.5-star rating when I was blowing through a bunch of things to give, you know, to say that I'd watched it.
Mm-hmm.
Like a dumbass, I gave that movie 3.5 stars. I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. I'm a little harsher on comedies than I need to be. But the point is that you can actually go to your profile and just change the rating without having to re-log it or re-review it.
And I will.
That's just something that I've come to know from using the platform more frequently. I think when I became a pro user, I've hit the F1 key and pulled up the PDF of the help file. I'm like, let me figure out how to power use this app, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a lot easier to use the website to go back and
I'm not sure I ever have.
A lot of people just use the app, but the website is like key for power users because you can blow through a ton of data. You know, you can have more tabs open in Chrome, so you can, like, if you're doing like making a list or if you're trying to figure out what to watch next. Getting a little bit more off topic, but yeah, I just wanted to just real quick interject that Letterboxd is an amazing app. And if I had that shit in high school, I would be flipping out. You know, I think I was using IMDb a little bit, right? So I've thrown up reviews and ratings on IMDb, but okay. IMDb has a little bit of that old style internet, one page, you know, flat,
it's
one
not,
page.
It's not super user friendly. The interface is not.
It's gotten better. It's actually one of the first websites like ever.
No, I know.
So yeah. It has that baggage, I guess, but it's a, you know, you can't fault IMDb. They're the OGs.
Yeah. Okay, fair.
But yeah, getting back to the substance, I just want to say that, you know, we had the Reanimator is fresh in my mind every day. I wake up every day thinking about Reanimator.
Oh,
and
I have not made any comparison between those two movies until you just said that.
It's just kind of funny that the two kind of share a lot of the same DNA. And
yeah.
Reanimator is a perfect movie to me. You know, you get in, you get out, you get your thrills and whatnot. But, you know, I'm totally in we're nothing new under the sun territory when it comes to cinema. And so for them to take a genre classic like Reanimator, borrow key pieces of that and the whole like future is female thing and just kind of make it a story about an aging actress and stuff, I just felt like that movie hit all of its marks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I chose instant classic in my review to say, like, we're gonna be like, how it's haunting you, we're gonna be talking about that movie forever and ever. Every Halloween some uninitiated person is gonna be like, oh, what should we watch, and someone's gonna be like, oh, it's time to run this. You know, some people will say that it was too long, like there was a fourth act or whatever, the
how
movie
was
too
long.
It? Well, I mean, it was a little over 2 hours. It was probably like 2 hours and 20 minutes or something like that.
Okay.
But my issue is that these people complain that a movie is too long. I see that as a good thing. I'm like, oh, there's more movie. Like, some people act like they got something else to get back to. What do y'all have to get back to? I'm in church right now. I'm watching a movie. I don't want this shit to end.
No. Okay. But a movie can be too long. I have seen movies that are too long.
Yeah.
But I did not feel like that movie lasted that long.
Mm-hmm. It was the editing.
It went by.
Yeah, the editing. I have to shout out the editing because that movie could have felt too long if the editing hadn't just been like boom, 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 boom. But yeah, I've seen some complaint that were like, this person was like, oh, 23 years old, and they were like, it's too long. And I was like, what do you got to get back to TikTok?
Well, exactly.
The fuck?
But, okay, now we sound like boomers. But I think the only reason I didn't rate that movie out of 5 off the rip is because of something internalized in me. I was uncomfortable with how well the movie did what it was trying to do.
Okay.
And so, although I think my review was a little more clever and quippy, I think that you deserve the point.
Cool. I appreciate that. One point in my camp.
One point.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like post The Substance, you know, I was like, I need to check out more Demi Moore movies.
Oh, that's right.
And so I was like looking at her filmography and I was like, Striptease, 96 or 97. That was that blind spot for me. But I was like,
as one does.
Hey, I'm a young straight male and I used to be in a video store a lot. And I definitely remember seeing that poster.
It's iconic.
She's basically naked, sitting in crouching on the poster. And I used to see that like in the movie store.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is this half naked woman just hanging over all these VHS tapes. You know, I'd be in there with my mom, and I'd catch a glimpse. And
her bangs looked really good too.
So I did a little bit more research, and I found out that that movie was big for not just Demi Moore, but women in general. At the time, it was the highest that anyone had ever been paid for a movie. And it was because, well, the highest
a woman
had ever been paid for a movie. I think she got something like $30, $35 million for that role.
For striptease?
To bear all.
In what year?
In the 96, 97 or whatever. Like the whole point, like they were shopping the script around. By the way, the script is terrible. It's like a freaking Scooby-Doo episode on crack. It's not a very good movie. But the fact is they were like, we have to, I think this is like the post Showgirls world where they were like, I think the studios were just trying to see if they could do some more risque films. And so they offered her to go topless and full frontal in this movie.
What did you rate Striptease?
I think I gave it like a 2 or 1. I think I gave it a 1 to 1.5.
So are you saying that people were wrong to not show up then? Or
no, they're not wrong. I just think that it was she was probably, I don't know. I'm trying to put myself in her shoes. Like,
yeah,
you know, this is she followed it up with G.I. Jane later. So she had like a tougher role.
Oh, that's right.
She's getting the shit kicked out of her in that movie. And she's like crawling through the sand in G.I. Jane.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she bounced back. I mean, that G.I. Jane also flopped at the cinema, but still,
damn.
I mean, you know, this is like a little Demi Moore era of the 90s, you know, but yeah, Striptease was hell
all
no.
Right. Well, whatever she did in the past, she gets her flowers now.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the point.
The substance was the right thing for Demi Moore to do.
All right. The next film is Yellow Submarine.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, I have seen this movie dozens of times. And you saw it for the first time.
Just a week.
Just a couple nights ago. All right. Here's your review. This is the shit.
Yes, it was.
Can't wait to watch this 1,000 more times. 5 stars.
Mm.
All right. Now, before you say anything, here's my review. I've been watching and loving this movie for 30 years. What can I say? I'm a born Liverpooler. 5 stars. So we have the same star rating. I want to hear a little bit more about your opinion because, as I said, I've seen this many, many times for decades now.
You had the better review.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, let's just go ahead and give that to you because
I'm a born Liverpooler.
That's
because I had the pun.
That's a line from the movie. The Beatles are from Liverpool. He pulls a lever in the movie. The line was great. Your review was great. I mean, yeah. But my experience with Yellow Submarine really starts with the discography of the Beatles, right?
Well, that's funny because I actually, the movie was my introduction to that album. I didn't hear the album first. And then I, in sixth grade, I did a social studies project on Beatlemania and I had little Yellow Submarines like hiding on different places on my little trifold board. Yeah.
Yeah. You're the Yellow Submarine Stan
in the
family.
Yeah, I am.
My introduction to the Beatles was when they dropped the Beatles 1 compilation. Do you remember this?
Wait a minute. Your parents didn't listen?
No. That was.
Oh.
Do you know the compilation that I'm talking about? The Beatles 1? It's the one with the red with the yellow 1 on it.
Yeah, but that didn't come out like that wasn't. That came out. When did that come out?
Early 2000s, late
exactly.
90s-ish.
So it's not like one of their, it's a compilation of their original content.
Right. And this isn't new for artists to put out a compilation that strictly comprises just their number one hits.
Right.
In fact, after the Beatles dropped Beatles 1, Michael Jackson put out number ones. And so this concept, the music industry, they were just like, oh, we're just going to put out just a compilation of the number ones. Anyway, that was such a massive statement for the Beatles. And that was my first big introduction to the Beatles. That was like my gateway drug. You got to keep in mind, I'm a little younger than you, right? So when that dropped, my parents picked it up on CD.
Did you just age me?
I'm just saying, let's be fair. There's a 4-year high school difference between us. So my parents never bought music. So when the Beatles 1 came out, something compelled them to go pick it up.
No, but that's interesting because like my dad was obsessed with my dad was born in 51. So he was obsessed with the Beatles. That's why he started a rock band. So are you saying that your parents didn't listen to the Beatles consistently in your home growing up?
So we did in a post Beatles 1 situation, right?
Wow.
My parents were broke growing up, and they were broke. Sure. Basically, you know, they had three kids all at once, and so they were constantly. Yeah. It was like we got the money, right? So if yeah. they bought an album or something,
oh,
it was
it's like now we can finally.
Yeah. So yeah. like once we were of age, they were like, okay, we're buying physical media now and stuff. So when the Beatles One showed up, that was something that was stuck in the car CD player. So it was like Beatles constantly. And it was that was like I was saying, it's the gateway drug, right? So after that, yeah. I went and like literally like an audiophile student went and got every single Beatles LP from start to finish, and I listened to everything. So obviously, when I got to the Yellow Submarine studio album, those mm-hmm. songs work on their own. The rights of the film got went from United Artists, like they were locked up in a vault, and so it was only in 1999 when that movie was re-released on video cassette DVD, and they actually went back and redid a 5.1 sound mix for the Yellow Submarine, mm-hmm. and so that was like that was part of their promotion. They were like, we've hand restored the film, we've given it a surround mix, and we're putting it out on VHS and DVD. Even when the push of that film came back out in the marketplace, I didn't want to see it. I have such a...
Well, and they had some kind of event during the pandemic. There was something in 2020 or 2021 where they aired the movie on YouTube, and that's when I first showed it to the kids. They pushed it then, too, but I just... always loved the magic, and it's like it's trippy.
Yeah,
obviously the music, like you can't.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm really adverse to animation and cartoons. I don't really.
Oh, you are. Yeah,
I don't really go for cartoons or children's media. You know, something has to transcend the culture for me to be like, oh, this is like, you know, Pixar were trendsetters, and so you can see all the mm-hmm. Pixar movies. But if something was a cartoon, especially from the past. You know, and it's not a Disney film. Like, you got to remember, Yellow Submarine was not a big studio movie. It was like...
But it was the Beatles. They were making movies.
I think the...
I had all of their movies on VHS in a cabinet.
Yeah.
Growing up.
That's cool. The scarcity of the movie on home video probably lent to another reason why it was inaccessible for me. Most of the time, if you're asking me why I haven't seen a movie, it's because no one let me borrow it. Nobody was like sitting me down like, you have to check this out.
And it wasn't a Blockbuster.
It might have been, but it was why. So that's all the way at the freaking end of
but probably Yellow Submarine was probably not in Blockbuster. I don't know, but I'm guessing.
Somebody has to be like, you need to check this out. I'm like, okay, sure. And they're like, no, you really have to check it out. And I'm like, oh, the double recommendation. Yeah. Okay, well, then I guess I will. So, yeah, we sat down. We watched Yellow Submarine on Laserdisc for the first time this week. And I picked it up. I don't even remember where I got the Laserdisc copy, but it was when I was vacuuming as many Laserdiscs in the Atlanta area. I was going into record stores. If somebody could have just had one Laserdisc in a box, I'd be like, yep, I'm taking it, you know. And so, like, it's been sitting on my shelf. And, you know, yeah. I think Sarah was about to go to sleep. And I was like trying to do a double feature. I was like, no, stay up. And,
Yellow Submarine?
Yeah, exactly. Hello. She was like, throw that on. And I cannot believe we sat
Second
there
wind.
Until 1:30 in the morning watching this freaking cartoon. And I liked it. I really liked it. I thought that it all makes sense. It's like you've got the music ingrained in your soul. And so seeing the 50-50, the other half of it, seeing the film in all of its analog glory was amazing. Yeah. So thanks for making me sitting down and watching it.
But here's the thing. If you don't have the music in your soul, if you have no idea what music we're talking about,
you got life fucked up.
No, you will still enjoy it because I hadn't heard everything. The movie is how I learned that music. So
Yellow Submarine recommended.
All right. So that's my point. You gave me that point.
Hell yeah.
That was a gimme. Third movie. Ready?
Run it.
Beetlejuice.
Okay, part two, okay.
So we saw this one in theaters, and spoiler alert, we rated it the same,
mm-hmm.
but we had very different reviews. So here's your review. I gotta say, pretty good sequel. It definitely brought the vibes. Good to see with a crowd. Art direction on fleek. Acting on swole. Do you stand by this review?
Indeed, man.
All right, I will allow you to elaborate if you wish, but let me read mine. I haven't seen a sequel this good since Problem Child 2.
Hell
Four
yeah.
stars. Yeah.
Problem Child 2 is the fan favorite, right? Everybody says they love Problem Child 2.
John Ritter?
Everybody loves it. Everybody says they would rather watch that one than the first one. Like, just the other day, Jim showed his girls that, you know, so, but I used the word swole in my review, so.
Yes, you did. And I don't, is that how you spell it? S-W-O-L-E?
Yeah.
I thought it was S-W-O-L-L.
No, that's swole. We're talking about swole. Fuck. Like, flexed up. Shorty?
Yeah, no, I thought...
So, I think I'm gonna, you know, here's why I'm leaning more towards my review, right? Because I brought up...
Oh, wait, you're leaning towards you have the better review.
Yeah, I'm just saying, here's why I'm leaning towards it, right?
Let's hear it.
Because okay. I mentioned the art department. The doors are slanted. It looks like a freaking German expressionist film. You know, like, the hair and makeup are on fleek. The acting is on swole. You know what I mean?
I'm not disagreeing. I mean, the art direction is impeccable.
Like, we can talk about the ho-ho script and the, you know, the randomness of the,
yeah,
you know, the characters.
I think we should.
But, like, I think that I mentioned the art direction, so I'm leaning more towards my
review. So you win? You mentioned the art direction, so you win. But you've pulled that card a couple times now.
I'm trying to win this game. It's a game. It's just the two of us, so.
I feel like I want to downgrade the way that I said I want to upgrade my substance rating.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I might need to downgrade my Beetlejuice rating.
Mm-mm. No I way. Don't,
it was so like.
It was great. It was rock solid. The movie was rock solid. The movie had everything that it needed to have.
I mean,
and you
could
tell it didn't have strong roles for African-American people. Everybody is accusing Tim Burton of being racist for not casting blacks in his films, right? We know
for
this.
For years now.
So the
years
fact that
years.
The only black people in that film are dancing at the Soul Train
oh,
at
shit.
The end of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's giving him shit for that, but...
Oh, okay, but that's interesting because almost every movie that I have on this list has something problematic. We're about to get to a pretty problematic one.
Okay.
And that was an issue I had not considered. So that's a new
but
problem unlocked.
Having said that, the film was awesome.
It was fun.
It was like...
And it was. It was a good sequel.
Yeah.
Like a late stage sequel. If that's what we're going to do...
A lot of legacy sequels have shit the bed. I think Top Gun 2 is the best legacy sequel that has ever been.
Of course, yeah.
But...
Ever?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Like, anybody with eyeballs and ears can fucking just... You know, that's an easy decision to make. Like, Top Gun 2, definitely. But other legacy sequels shit the bed. You know, there's too much studio interference. There's like, oh, this is what the fans want. We're going to give them more of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, we just wanted a decent movie. Like, you just literally yeah. said the line. They're like, oh, this is the big movement. And they're just saying the line from the previous movie. Like, stop the madness. Like, writers do better. Like, we don't want that shit.
But Beetlejuice did that.
But Beetlejuice has
he other, said the thing.
But Beetlejuice had other things going on.
Okay.
Like, you'll remember that the first time you see Beetlejuice, the character in the sequel, he's just sitting at a desk and he turns around and faces the camera.
Right.
There wasn't like a Marvel moment where everyone was supposed to clap. It was
of
just
course.
Like, wow, we're...
Here we are.
We know who this fucking guy is. It's yeah. part two. Like, the 30-year gap, it didn't need to matter.
Yeah.
And I felt like because they did that, they were able to squeeze in another storyline with the boyfriend. You know, they were able to squeeze in more content into the film by doing less, wow, where it's a sequel, remember Barry bullshit. You
know
what I mean?
But I didn't care for that, that every female protagonist in this film was being betrayed by their significant other. What is the George Bush quote?
Oh, shit.
Do it once, that's on me. Do it twice, shame on you.
We're not going to get fooled again.
Exactly.
I think rock solid 4 stars.
All
Beetlejuice
right.
set a bar that I feel like other legacy sequels should try to aspire
that's
to.
That's fair. That's fair. All right. So in that, so what? You think you get the point?
Yeah.
You going to give yourself the point?
Yeah, give me that.
All right. So here's the fourth one. And I already know who's going to get the point.
Okay.
Because it's... Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, yeah.
1992. Starring, you ready for it? Christy Swanson, Luke Perry, David Arquette, Rutger Hauer, Donald Sutherland, and Paul Rubens. Rest in peace.
Titans.
In the 90s.
Very affordable actors at the time.
Now, speaking of problematic things, I have to acknowledge that Christy Swanson, and it kills me every day. She was such a darling. Loved her in Mannequin 2. She had a bit part in Ferris Bueller.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a cameo on Psych within the last like 15, 20 years or something, where we were supposed to suspect her of being a vampire the whole episode.
Mm-hmm.
It was brilliant casting. It's great. I like her as an actress. She's also had like a lot of lesbian roles, and yet she's a Trumper.
Are we getting political on this shit?
No, I'm just saying. And then on top of that, it was obviously created by Joss Whedon, who has had some troubles.
Right. He's a bully. He's a big
like,
bully on
he
set.
He had some like sexual assault charges, didn't he?
I think he just, yeah.
I don't know.
He's
whatever.
More known for a bully. Like he makes people cry on set and it's his behavior is like out of control.
Well,
not professional.
Honestly, beyond that, he has in some ways disavowed the movie in favor of the series, which I have never seen and will never see.
Oh,
I have
good.
Not. Nope. Mm-mm, I've never watched the show.
It's better than the movie.
No, it's not. It's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
And the spinoff Angel is also
okay,
good.
But here's the thing. You like arguing me that I should watch something or that something is better than something else. We're going to get to that later.
Oh, God.
That's part of the show. All Don't right. worry. All right. But Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Right. Here are our reviews. My review. Ben drove an hour to get this on Open Mat LD for me, and I provided insightful commentary throughout. 5 stars.
All right.
Ben's review. This movie has issues.
Yes.
I watched with my resident number one super fan, Sarah, who talked all throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Open Mat LD. The chicks in the mall at the beginning mentioned not wanting to go to the mall movie theater because it doesn't support THX and Dolby. So I bumped the movie up 0.5 star. Funny line. 3.5 stars. Now, I truly believe with all of my being that this is a perfect movie.
Holy shit.
I've thought about it a lot.
Okay.
And this is a perfect movie. And you say this movie has issues.
Big issues. Elaborate on the issues?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I've only seen this movie twice and... You know, it's coming in under 90 minutes, and so it's like I think it's the ending. So we're at this
dance
scene, right? And she like cuts out of the dance right when the vampires are showing up to destroy the dance. Right?
They can't come in because they weren't invited.
Right, but they get in anyway. So anyway,
because they're seniors.
But there's an adjacent sequence taking place between Christy, Buffy, and the bad guy, right? And it's happening somewhere else in the school, you know?
Yeah, like and in the band room or some shit.
Flipping back and forth between this dance scene and and there's, I don't feel like the two scenes, it's, they're just don't, you know, the editing, so there's like an addition, there's just something weird going on there. I don't know.
You can't even articulate it.
Yeah,
it's
I can't.
It's perfect.
No, here's the thing. It's like I can't put my finger on it. It's like
exactly.
We keep jumping back and forth between these two sequences and they don't complement each other and this is the ending and it's like I'm squirming in my seat because I'm like this is wrapping up so quickly. You know, like they're
it's
trying
a vampire attack.
They're trying to get the fuck out of this movie and roll the credits fast as hell.
Okay, when Rutger comes in, yeah, it goes a little faster than it had
to. That's the issues
fair.
Is like I'm an editor, right? So I notice these things when it comes to pacing. And I'm just like, this is the big moment. This is the big bad. This is the showdown. And yet it just feels rushed. And so my brain is like, why is everything happening so quickly? Why is all of a sudden the big bad defeated so quickly? And then they hop on the motorcycle, drive off, and then the credits are rolling. And I'm just like, dude, this movie, we were just in the big bad 7 minutes ago.
Okay.
7 minutes go by, the credits are rolling. And I'm just like, dude, they were trying to get us the fuck out of this movie quick.
But how did Top Gun end?
They defeat the planes, they land on the aircraft carrier, and then they do the thumbs up thing. What the are you talking about part two? How did Top Gun 1 end?
No, I'm Top Gun 1.
That's how it ended. It took its time. They just drawn out. Yeah, but here's the thing. Top Gun has a score accompaniment, right? And the score, it gives heft and it makes the runtime appropriate, right? Buffy is like, okay, you know, even the score of Buffy is like, the music is like,
well,
there's just issues
like
there.
The musical stuff, but the diegetic music where Lothos is playing the violin,
mm-hmm.
That is a gorgeous piece of music. And they draw it out, as evidenced by Paul Rubens dying for like 5 minutes.
That's what I'm saying. The shit should be heavier. Like, what's happening should be heavier. And yet they're just like, skip, 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 skip. And then the credits are rolling.
Oh, man.
Like, if you set a timer between when that scene is happening, it's like 7 minutes and the curtains are closed. And I'm just like, wait a minute. What the fuck? Like, what? The movie's over already?
All right. Hold on. Let's look at this. So here's the problem. I've reviewed this movie several times. So my most recent one was just acknowledging that you went and got it on Laserdisc. Thank you.
Yeah. My baby needs that. I mean, okay, let's give the point to you.
You've got one. What?
Let's give the point to you.
But then you can't win.
Oh, that's fine. No. You get the point. I mean, you chose the movie. You got the better review. There's more passion filled review.
It's in my top four.
Here it is.
It will be in my top four for all time. It will be in my top four for all time.
I kind of shat on the movie because it's not my favorite, right? But your review is a passionate, hardcore fan of the movie. Okay. And so it's like, I can't argue with that. If you love the movie, you love the movie, and your review should reflect that. It does. It's the better review, and so the point goes to you.
Okay. But I will say, I like that you gave it a half point for the whole THX Dolby thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, because if something's campy, I'll always give it an extra half point to a full point.
Sure.
And if it references surround sound, you'll give it a half point.
Yeah, like I want to say the first time we sat down to watch it, I caught that line. I was like, okay. But since that first viewing and now, my appreciation of Dolby surround and THX has gone way off the deep end. You know, like I wish I could go back in time and be a Dolby engineer or like a THX, you know what I mean? So like those brands and those technologies mean way more to me now than when I did. So when we watched it again and those lines happened, I was just like, I almost couldn't believe those lines were sandwiched in there, because coming from Joss Whedon, it was like,
oh yeah,
these broads who are just like instantly talking about clothes all of a sudden talk about something that's almost out of character for them. Back then, audiences probably didn't know what the fuck those two things were.
Yeah.
They're like little tiny Ike logos on the bottom of a movie poster. You know, like, why in the fuck did they just randomly mention THX and Dolby? It was like a throwaway line, but it was just so stupid that it made me laugh, because I was like, I could literally see him typing it on a freaking like typewriter for the screenplay. Like, that wasn't something on the set that they were like, yo, say this real quick. Like, those lines were in the script.
Yeah.
Let's have these chicks talk about something completely different than clothes or whatever.
Yeah. But honestly, it was probably also like an elitist reference.
Sure. Well, I mean,
like, out of character for those particular characters, but it was in the theme of being elitist, but also kind of a little, you know, nerdy inside joke.
Because they're like, they go from talking about clothes to Dolby to boys. It's like, what? And
that's what girls do.
So yeah, you get the
all
point
right,
there.
All right, all right. So it's 3-1. You can't win, but I threw this last one in just for you.
Say word.
It's kind of squeaking in there, because I actually haven't seen the entire movie and I haven't reviewed or rated it. But we watched a critical portion of it together fairly recently. You also showed it to most of the family.
What? What is it? Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
What
okay.
is it?
Cliffhanger.
That's right. Cliffhanger. And Ben's review reads, pretty mean-spirited, actually. Nice practical effects and an amazing opening scene. 3.5 stars. And the opening scene is the reason that I included this, because we watched it together.
Yeah.
And I am traumatized.
Yeah.
And I would like to... Well, I don't know what you mean by mean-spirited, because I didn't see the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I can elaborate.
But okay, go ahead.
Around this time, Schwarzenegger and Stallone were actually competing for like who had the bigger
action hero.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, you know, it was Stallone versus Schwarzenegger in the market. And so you've got your fans had their favorite, whatever. So this is
was
after,
it like a there can be only one?
No, they
thing,
just they actually had a personal rivalry at the box office.
Are they friends now?
Yeah, they were in the Expendables together and they work out together and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
But this was a professional rivalry. Well, I won't say it's a personal one, but at the time, you know, Terminator 2 had come out and the Total Recall was before that.
Okay.
And so Stallone, and then Stallone and Arnold both had movies that came out this year. One was Last Action Hero with Arnold.
I love Last Action Hero.
It fell on its face. It flopped big time. And what it competed with was Cliffhanger, and Cliffhanger won out that year.
I didn't know those were the same year.
93. So here's the thing about that movie is that I listened to the commentary track, and Rennie Harlan, the director, was trying to one-up himself because, you know, the 90s was the action blockbuster, and a lot of these guys were trying to one-up themselves constantly. And so for Cliffhanger, they decided to go all the way to the Alps and just do it for real. You know what I mean? And they...
Wait, that wasn't... That was real? That wasn't green screen?
No, they're actually out there hanging on the rocks and stuff like that. I think if anybody has seen Falling, there's a blue screen, you know, for safety reasons, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're out there for real. And that's probably why the movie sold so well or did so well at the box office, is because everybody wanted to go see practical effects.
Real as fuck. Yeah.
This is a time when John Lithgow is doing some of the best villains.
Oh, he's the villain.
Yeah.
I don't see it. Like, again, I don't know him as the villain until he's in Dexter.
Okay.
He's the dad from Harry and the Hendersons to me.
So there's a movie called Ricochet with Denzel, and he's the villain in that. And it is like,
oh, yeah.
He is such a piece of shit in that movie. So this is after that. So he's good at playing these like horrible.
Well, he can do anything.
Horrible persons. And in basically the plot of Cliffhanger is these people they've robbed a plane midair, and they've stolen millions of dollars in cash. But then the cash falls out of the airplane and lands on a mountain. It's Stallone's mountain, right?
Fucking stupid.
Right.
Like, so dumb.
This cash landed on the wrong mountain. It landed on Stallone's mountain, right? So they're trying to find the cash because they've got beacons, GPS on the money. So like the bad guys are on the mountain, Stallone's on the mountain, and they've taken the good people hostage. And anyway, they're killing innocent people. There's the villains in this movie are innocent people are getting in the way, and they're getting shot up. People are getting shot in the chest. Squibs are happening. You know, there's innocents just getting mowed down.
Mad squibs.
And I was just like, damn, you know, this is something you don't see anymore. That's the mean-spirited comment. As I was watching it, and I was just like, I obviously don't have a problem with that, but I was just like, damn, this.
That's just rude.
What? Yeah, I was just like, John Lithgow's character is just like, I don't give a fuck. You know, he's like literally saying that.
How would you compare him to the villain in Die Hard?
So they're actually very similar because they're both like highly educated, highly motivated, and money driven, right? I would almost say that the Die Hard villain is better written. Like he's more three dimensional as a villain. But Lithgow is just doing like, I don't care what we're going to do. He's turning on the people who's helping him, you know? So like, and you know, when you're a group of robbers and you guys start turning on each other and you start eliminating each other, there's like questionable ranks. They're like, oh, I can't believe so-and-so is doing this shiesty bullshit. So that's kind of what happens to Lithgow is everybody turns on him.
All right. But celebrity deathmatch.
Alan Rickman, John Lithgow?
Yeah.
Holy shit. John Lithgow would kick Alan Rickman's ass.
For real?
I mean, I've seen a... John Lithgow plays a good villain.
Is that official?
Final answer. Lithgow is just like, oh my God. And I had to watch Raising Kane afterwards just to see more Lithgow craziness. Because he's crazy in that movie too.
Like, okay.
Lithgow, underrated. One of the best villain character actors of all time.
No, and I believe it. Because like I said, Dexter... Which is contemporary and kind of lame for me to first know that he's a villain, but he was fucking creepy. So that's your point.
Okay, cool. Because I did watch the whole movie.
Right. Because I'm basically disqualified. However, I think I win. Did I win? Yeah. 3-2.
Yay.
But there's a bonus round.
Oh, shit. Okay. Bonus round.
It's more of a mini game.
Let's do it.
And the name of the mini game / bonus round, whatever the fuck, is Sarah Hates Movies.
All right.
Wherein Ben tries to convince Sarah to watch a movie she's been resisting.
Oh, God.
However, there's a catch. If you can convince me, we will watch that movie within the next 48 hours.
What the fuck? Okay.
So that means that whatever you convince me to watch, you too have to watch in the next 48 hours, which probably isn't an issue for you because you're going to be watching movies anyway.
Quit telling on me. Quit making me sound like a fat ass nerd.
And I, And I know we've had some conversations in the last couple of days, so you might have some things in mind.
Okay.
But I'm going to set a timer for 38 seconds because I am 38 years old, at okay. least for the next couple of days.
All right.
And you, do you have your movie in mind?
Yeah, sure. Okay. So wait, what are the rules again? What do I have to do?
You are trying to convince me to watch a movie. So, okay, for context, I have this weird personality quirk where I, for no reason, refuse to watch certain movies or TV shows. I demonstrated it earlier with Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I will never watch that TV show.
Okay.
No interest. Okay. I have no reason for it. I just don't wanna.
Okay.
All right. And we talked about it before. I don't want to name any movies we've talked about because it might be the one you pick.
All right.
So I don't want like spoilers. But there are just certain things that I'm like, fuck that. Don't want to.
Sure. Life is too short.
Yeah.
So wait, what do I have to do again?
So the rule is, so you can pick any movie that you personally want me to watch.
Okay.
That I have previously refused to watch. And you have 38 seconds to make your case.
About why you should watch this movie.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Cool.
And I will be completely objective. And if you win me over, we will watch that movie in the next 48 hours.
Damn, 38 seconds. All right.
38 seconds.
Okay, seems you a let, random you... number. Okay. Freeway, 1996. This is a movie starring Kiefer Sutherland and Reese Witherspoon, right? The only way that I can describe this that gives it any kind of sense is it's a take on Little Red Riding Hood, right? Shorty's on the side of the road. Kiefer Sutherland gives her a ride. Okay. And all of a sudden, it's like the hitchhiker from hell. Well, this recently got a 4K release. And so, you know, it's like when somebody gives a 4K release, it's like they're like, this needs to be seen to a new audience, right? Basically, when I saw it the first time, I saw the 4K resto. And when I watch a movie like this, I'm like, dude, this Sarah would love this, right? I go into a movie thinking like, Sarah would love this. I can't wait to show this to Sarah. And so when I got the Laserdisc, because I was like, Sarah, I got this to watch together. And you were like, no, I don't like Reese Witherspoon. And I'm like, this is not a typical Reese Witherspoon. This is like one of her first roles. And she's playing like an Alabama trailer park trash. And you are on
That's
her.
That's what she always
but
plays.
But you're on her side throughout the whole movie. And it's well written. It has an amazing ending. And Kiefer Sutherland plays a great villain. And it's like, it's just awesome. It's just an awesome movie. And it's like camp. And it's well written. And it's just so
it's
silly.
Camp. It's camp and it's Little Red Riding Hood.
It's like a comedy.
I will watch a camp Little Red Riding Hood.
Okay, sweet. How much time we got left?
I told you when I made that noise. You didn't hear the noise?
Oh,
you're okay. Way over time. All right.
So wait, did I win? Because you said you would watch it?
Yes, baby.
Okay, cool. Freeway. It's a good watch. I recommend it to everybody out there. Look it up. Freeway 96. It's directed by Oingo, he's like a Oingo Boingo.
Oingo Boingo.
Yeah, he
what,
like
Danny Elfman. What the fuck?
Nah, he's like a henchman of Oingo Boingo.
What?
Yeah, if that gives you any kind of context,
does it?
It's no, he's crazy. So the movie's crazy, okay. And like, talk about hilariousness.
Oingo Boingo henchman.
He's like
Camp Red Riding Hood.
A take on Red Riding Hood.
Kiefer Sutherland
as the villain and Reese Witherspoon as Little Red Riding Hood.
Okay. It's good. All right.
And the ending is batshit crazy. It's like, wow, hell yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to give it to you.
Some movies don't have good endings. This one is like, what the fuck?
So here's the thing. You get a point because, yes, I will watch that movie with you in the next 48 hours.
Oh, tight. Okay.
So that means we're tied.
Yay.
3-3.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Hey.
So how should we sign off?
It's what's in the box.
There's a movie in there.
Yeah, there's a movie in there, baby. Yes. Thank you so much for putting this together. Cool name. You got the logo made. You got the username locked down. I can't wait to sit down and edit this and put it out into the world. And I can't wait to do more. I feel like, you know, guests are really cool. We'll get you a better microphone. Sarah bought her own microphone for this.
I need a new microphone. I also want to say from the jump... Till Schweimer is welcome in our basement.
Till Schweiger?
God damn it!
That's his name.
God damn it! Why am I having a stroke?
It's German. It's weird.
My name is German. Schweiger. Yeah. Till Schweiger. Oh, wait. If I say it three times, will he appear?
Hell no.
Till Schweiger. Till Schweiger. Till Schweiger.
Oh, he appeared in my heart just now. But yeah, it would be cool to have some guests on the show, and it would be really cool to also do this again. So thank you, Sarah.
Yes.
And we'll see you guys on the next episode. Bye for now.
Goodbye.